From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. The holidays are supposed to be a time for loved ones and families, for all of us to show the best of ourselves in love and in giving, in kindness, and in communal joy. But do the kids know this? Does their behavior reflect a deep sense of gratitude? Do they demonstrate the common courtesies that denote a recognition of the world beyond themselves and their devices? Now, okay, look. Am I saying that the kids are rude these days? Am I that angry grandma yelling, "Get off my lawn"? Am I every oldster ever lamenting the lost social mores of yesteryear? Well, probably. But I'm not alone, because take this. Back in 2016, three-quarters of respondents to an Associated Press poll said that manners have deteriorated over the past several decades, and our children are growing up in this world. And we're not talking about false formalities. We're talking about manners that reveal a basic empathy, which, in this season above all, should be in great abundance. So this hour on Point, kids, manners, and the holidays. And you can join us. Do you think children are more rude today than they were before? Or should we celebrate what we're seeing? These are kids with voice, with assertiveness, and with an independent streak. Now, manners and common courtesies, they're also a form of social glue. They hold us all together. So what do we lose when we don't teach, support, or model these very behaviors anymore? How do you encourage empathy in your children? What do you do to encourage that? Find us online on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, we've got a couple of great guests to talk us through this major parenting conundrum. Saying that for a friend. Joining us in the studio is Rick Weisbord. He is co-director of the Human Development and Psychology Program at Harvard University's Graduate School of Education. He's also the director of Harvard's Making Caring Common Program, which focuses on children's moral and ethical development. Rick, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Also with us from Miami is Catherine Reynolds Lewis. She's the author of The Good News About Bad Behavior, Why Kids Are Less Disciplined Than Ever, and What to Do About It. We have an excerpt of that at onpointradio.org. Catherine is also a certified parent educator and an award-winning journalist who's written for a number of publications, including Bloomberg, The New York Times, Parents Magazine, and The Washington Post. Catherine Reynolds Lewis, welcome to you.
My pleasure. Great to be with you.
So first of all, Catherine, let me ask you, am I sort of a superannuated grandma who thinks the kids are worse behaved than they actually are?
Well, if you are, then you're in good company, because it's something that I hear a lot. And when I started researching for my book, I was also a little skeptical. Is it really worse than ever? Are kids less disciplined? And I read hundreds of studies and came to the conclusion that, yes, we really do have what I call a crisis of self-regulation. And kids just have more trouble managing their behavior, thoughts, and emotions than generations ago. And one way that shows up is fewer pleases and thank yous.
Well, so Rick, let me turn to you first of all. So pleases and thank yous, I mean, they're little things, but to me they're like a canary in the coal mine. Do you agree with Catherine that even just in these very basic common courtesies, are we actually seeing less of that?
Well, I think there are big race, class, and culture differences mm-hmm. in this that are really important to pay attention to. You know, my sense is, in many middle and upper class communities, you do see some deterioration of manners. Many communities of color, there's a very strong premium placed on respect and decency and good manners. So I think that the differences are important to pay attention to. But I will say that one thing that I think has changed is the degree to which, in many communities, we have elevated achievement and happiness as the primary goals of child raising and demoted or marginalized concern for other people. And we see that in our data. You know, so if we ask, we've asked about 50,000 young people, what's most important to you, caring for other people, achieving, or being happy? And about 80% pick achievement or happiness first.
The young people are saying
that. Young people say that. We ask them, how do you imagine your parents would rank these things for you? They're even more likely to think that their parents would rank some aspect of their success over their caring for other people. Just one other quick fact. Interestingly, when you ask parents what's most important to you in child raising, they say that my kids are caring. So there's this big gap between what parents are espousing and what kids are absorbing. And I think manners are in part, or the lack of manners are in part a reflection of the degree to which we have marginalized caring for other people.
Oh, there's so much to dig into there. And I promise we're gonna do that here. But before we sort of zoom out completely, Catherine, I just do want to ask you what it pleases, thank yous. I mean, God, I really do sound like I'm pining for yesteryear, but like holding the door open for folks. I don't know, making eye contact, like actually being able to maybe have a small conversation about, hi, how are you? I don't know. Maybe it says a lot about the circles that I run in, but I feel like I am seeing less of this. And to Rick's point, are there sort of differences in various communities in the United States? Have you seen that too?
Yes. Well, it's a very important point, and I agree with much of what he said that, you know, it really does vary from community to community. But, you know, after I wrote my book and went on book tour, I did maybe 60 different talks all across the country with really a wide variety of socioeconomic areas. And I was surprised that in very different communities, I heard the same complaints from parents and teachers about their kids. And I think that that points to an underlying shift that I think is also really evident in the data when you look at, you know, specific, you know, qualitative studies or even these sort of broad longitudinal studies, and you see a real decline in kids' ability to control themselves and to, you know, these little social niceties, as both of you have said, and I think it's really true, these reflect some of our values. So if we are not teaching our kids empathy or politeness or showing concern for others by holding the door, then that's a small thing that also betrays the other many ways that we're not teaching our kids important skills. And you see it in the rise of narcissism. And I also believe in anxiety, depression, ADHD. All of those are issues around self-control and self-regulation and betray that our children just really aren't getting those really important social and emotional skills that then help them to get through the day with those small social graces that mean a lot to those of us who are somewhat older.
Mm. Well, so again, with the eyes wide open awareness that literally every generation has said that the one or ones following them are terribly, terribly behaved since the dawn of time, I will fully acknowledge that. We are still of our time. And Catherine, let me ask you, what do you think are sort of some of the major forces by which we grown-ups, to be honest, are creating an environment where we might be seeing a deterioration of these sort of communal behaviors that we should be relying on?
Yeah, well, in my book, I identify three big factors that have changed in the last 20, 30, 40 years that are also in research labs associated with higher rates of dysregulation, whether it's anxiety, depression, ADHD. Those are, number one, the disappearance of childhood play. Our kids are overscheduled. They don't have a lot of unstructured playtime. They're supervised. And play is the work of childhood. That's how kids have always learned self-regulation and self-control. And in fact, one of the things I always advise parents when they're working on manners is make it a game. You know, we in our home, we play pretend fancy restaurant to help our kids, you know, learn how to use their manners. And that's a really great way into teaching a skill that's fun for the kids. Number two is the rise, of course, in social media, technology, mass media in general, which turns our focus and our kids' focus outward so that they're really looking outside themselves for signals of what should my goals be? What do I want to be like? And whenever we have that extrinsic focus, it's very strongly tied to anxiety, depression, narcissism, mental ill health, as opposed to intrinsic focus. When you're tuned into yourself, what helps you find that flow? What do you feel really invested in doing? That's very tied to mental well-being and self-control and regulation. And then the third really big factor that's changed is that kids are unemployed. So our kids don't have after-school jobs. They don't have household chores. As Rick said, they are very focused on achievement, and we are telling them that that's their job. Their job is school, to achieve, to be great athletes and superstars and on the you know, stage or in music or arts, which are great goals that we want our kids to achieve. But at core, we need them to feel that they matter in their homes because they are contributing to the running of the family, whether that's watching a younger kid or helping get dinner on the table. And that is much more tied to mental health, that sort of sense of belonging and really mattering to the people closest to you and to the people in your immediate community. So I would say those three things are really important. And tied into that is this focus on achievement and happiness over character.
Right. So Rick, again, there's in the three things that Catherine just laid out, there's a lot to dig into. But first of all, we just have a minute left to go before the break. But talk to me about play. This is something that comes up a lot in our conversations about, childhood here in America right now. I mean, do you see a de-emphasis on play as relating to an increased emphasis on achievement?
I think this one is just, to some extent, again, class, race, culture based, and that there are variations in this. I mean, and just as I agree with all the things that Catherine said. I think the three factors that she pointed to are very important. But there are a lot of kids who are doing chores in many communities, and there are a lot of kids who are working to support their families. So that's what's getting in the way of play in some families. In other families, there is this, tremendous problem of being overscheduled, this belief that you have to take 10 AP courses to get into college or be involved in 12 extracurricular activities. So that squeezes out play. So different things going on in different communities.
Well, we're talking this hour about kids and manners, but really about empathy as well. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Kids, I've tried to raise you the best I could. Kids, all the things I've done were for your own good. Kids, can't you once appreciate how I've sacrificed working, slaving, scrimping, saving pennies and living with your father? Kids, no one knows the burdens I've had to bear and in my condition. Kids, I'm a poor sick woman and does he care? Ha! Go on and kill me. That's what it's coming to when a mother has kids like you.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about kids, their behavior, simply put, manners, especially around the holidays, because the question is, are kids different or more badly behaved than they were in generations past? And if so, why? Definitely want to hear what you think about how kids are behaving these days, what messages we as adults are sending to them. And also give us a call if you just think this is a bunch of old people complaining about kids, because every generation does that as well. I'm joined today by Catherine Reynolds-Lewis. She's the author of The Good News About Bad Behavior, Why Kids Are Less Disciplined Than Ever and What to Do About It. Rick Weisbord also joins us. He's the co-director of Human Development and Psychology Program at Harvard University's Graduate School of Education and the director of the Making Caring Common Program, also at Harvard. And let's just quickly go to the phones here. Let's go to Matt, who's calling from Tampa, Florida. Matt, you're on the air.
Hello. I appreciate the topic. As a parent of a 5- and 8-year-old and a coach to teenagers, this is something I deal with every day and struggle with. I think it's easy to point to the kids, but I think the main issue is looking back inward. And kids haven't changed because clearly they're learning. It's the parents and the adults that have. So how we struggle with that every single day, how we stay present, sitting at a dinner table, making them look at it, look at the waiter and order something, or looking at our phone and not being present and doing the opposite. I think those are the key things, in my opinion, someone who's seen it on the battlegrounds every single day. I think that's the bigger issue. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate everybody's viewpoints because this is very helpful.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for your call. So, Rick, let me turn to you on that. I think Matt's hitting on something that deserves a lot more exploration, that we as parents or adults might say we value certain things and wish for our children to learn certain behaviors, but are we modeling something entirely different?
Yeah, no, I think I really appreciate Matt's point. I think there are two issues. I mean, there are at least two issues. One is the modeling issue. So, you know, in a restaurant, are we appreciative of a server? Are we thanking the bus driver? Are we doing, are we modeling for our kids a wide circle of concern? Like, these are all people in our lives who we need to be respectful to. So that's one issue, is what we're modeling. Are we rude in ways that we're not aware of? But the other issue is, are we expecting our kids to do those things?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and routinely expecting them. So, you know, if they're, and I don't think that if you clear the table or set the table, or if you're, say, hello to someone who walks in the house, you should get a parade or a trophy. I mean, I think we should expect those things. Those are what we do in our family. And I think a lot of parents aren't doing that. Let me just say one other thing really quickly, which is I also think a lot of parents are organizing their lives around their kids in a way that makes kids feel like all their needs are going to be catered to and other people are going to organize their lives around me. And this is partly a remnant of the therapeutic culture, I think, where parents started to feel deprived by their own parents. I mean, there's a lot here that we could unpack. But I think that's another issue that's going on right now, is the degree to which kids expect other people to organize themselves around them. And that in terms of the kind of thing the caller is talking about, we really need to expect our kids to organize around their people sometimes, often.
Catherine, what do you think about that?
Yes, I love that, both Rick's comment and also the caller, because I think it really is true that our kids are picking up often what our deep values are. So we may say that we want them to be polite and generous and empathetic, but then are our actions living up to that? Are we being polite and having an abundance mentality and sharing our resources with not just the people around us, but in general in the world? Or are we kind of being more selfish and hoarding opportunity or hoarding resources, whether it's something, you know, small or big? So I think that we really do have to have a very deep look at ourselves. But I would also say, in defense of parents, being a parent of kids myself and struggling with this on a day-to-day basis, we are parenting in a culture of fear, where we are getting messages that if we are not vigilant, if we are not trying to get our kids to have that next opportunity or to achieve, that somehow they're going to miss out on the golden ticket in life. So I think as a culture, we need to have more courage and be prepared as parents to say, I'm going to make this lesson, this manners lesson or the manners game, a priority today over flashcards, soccer drills, or all these other things that we might be spending our time with our kids doing.
Well, so Rick, what do you think about that? Because I think there's a lot of truth to what Catherine's saying about how some parents feel that they have to use your words, organize themselves around their kids for exactly the reasons why she's talking about here. But I mean, should we also then discuss they're doing that while thinking that they have to protect their children's self-esteem also at any and all cost?
You know, I think the irony here is that a lot of the things that we're doing to promote our kids' achievement and happiness in these situations, I mean, the kicker is they're not even promoting our kids' happiness and achievement. They may be undermining our kids' happiness and achievement. So, you know, if you're not requiring your kid to reach out to friendless kids on the playground or to think about other kids, then they're not going to, you know, they're not going to learn how to tune into other people. And if they can tune in and value other people, they're going to have better relationships their whole lives. They're going to be better friends. They're going to be better mentors. They're going to be better romantic partners. And those relationships are probably the most durable source of happiness that they have. When we spend, to use Catherine's example, when we spend all our time flashing vocabulary cards at the dinner table to prepare them for the SAT, we're putting this very high premium on a very narrow version of achievement. Mm-hmm. When we help our kids develop social-emotional skills like social awareness, perspective-taking, perspective coordination, gratitude, those skills turn out to be very important for college success and work success.
Life success.
Life success. And So we are crowding out attention to these skills that turn out to be very important to achievement and success. So I think it's backfiring. I think it's backfiring both in the sense that it's crowding out attention to concern for others and backfiring in the sense that it's in many cases undermining achievement.
Yeah. You know, this is if my mom and dad are listening right now, I want to say thank you, because one of the things that they made me do every single time we had visitors come over to our house when I was growing up, you know, aunties, uncles, neighbors, whatever, is no matter what I was doing, they would make me come into the room where the adults were, say hello, ask how they were doing, tell them about what was going on in my life. And I will be perfectly honest, I hated doing it as a kid.
I know.
Do I really have to?
But they're right. It's great. Yeah.
Well, but you know, in listening to what both you and Catherine are saying, there's two key things that they were doing, which now, in retrospect, I fully recognize. One is setting up the expectation that there are certain minimum standards of human interaction that we should all expect of each other. And two, it was thinking about my aunties and uncles and our friends and neighbors, thinking about them before I thought about, like, well, I just really want to go back and, like, watch my Saturday morning cartoons or whatever. So it was, thanks, Mom and Dad, for setting up that expectation. But let's go back to our call. Let's go to Susan, who's calling from Jupiter, Florida. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm Animal Hero Kids founder, and I do presentations in schools and reach 30,000 students each year. And I've been doing this for 40 years, and I foster empathy as the kindness education programs. And we actually recognize kindness, compassion, and courage in children. And I have seen a marked increase in empathy for other animals. I think you're talking about two different things here. Empathy for others does need to be fostered. And I do find, though, that children today really do have an increase in that. And I can compare it to 1980 when I first started Animal Hero Kids and the education work. As a matter of fact, I have a book, Animal Hero Kids Voices for the Voiceless, that is over 300 pages of kids from all walks of life, from all around the world, the Philippines, Brazil, and here in Florida, Liberty City, Miami. It doesn't actually matter which demographic, how much money or how wealthy the background is of the child. I find an increase in empathy.
Uh-huh.
I do think that the schools need to be more aware of how important it is to foster empathy. That is a skill that is just as important as math or English. And the book that we tell the stories from actually purposely fosters empathy, has kids put themselves in other people's or other mm-hmm. animals' situations.
Yeah.
And that's what needs to be increased.
Well, Susan, thank you so much for that call. Catherine, do you have a response to Susan? She says she sees more empathy now than she did before.
Well, I'm very glad for her. I have to disagree because if you look at the national data on narcissism, anxiety, depression, ADHD, it's showing a dramatic increase in these mental health challenges in our young people. A third of kids, according to this longitudinal study from the National Institutes of Health, have anxiety. So that's the biggest challenge. And to me, those are all things that get in the way. Maybe the kids feel empathy, but they're not able to express it. And then I would just also say anecdotally, I hear so many teachers and parents, even teachers, you know, in the last 5 years are seeing less social skills on the playground, kids who can't resolve their own conflicts, who are pushing each other out of the way because they just don't have the skills. So I do believe that evidence shows this is a crisis. I will agree with the caller that novels and reading is one of the best ways to foster empathy. And so, again, as parents, if we're working with our kids, you know, we're not going to give them a lesson with a moral that teaches them to empathy. We're going to be sharing stories from different cultures and you know, listening to our elders. I came from a very similar culture as you, Meghna, that where you sit and listen to your aunties and your uncles. even if it seems boring. And those stories actually really become important to your developing those sense of other people's stories and histories and perspectives. So, I think that the data is pretty compelling and stark, but I do think there's lots of solutions that are going to be helpful.
Rick, so let's take a step back here for a second, because empathy is one of those words that comes up a lot in these kinds of discussions. But maybe I'd just ask you a really basic question. You know, in the context of a modern child's life, when we say empathy and trying to foster it, first of all, what do we mean? What are we talking about?
So it's a great question. I think there are roughly three dimensions of empathy. One is being able to take someone else's perspective. And that's really not enough. Politicians, con men, torturers can be very good at taking other people's perspective, but they don't value other people. Another aspect of empathy is affective. It's emotional. It's being able to experience someone else's feelings. And babies even can experience other babies' feelings to some extent. But again, that's important, and it's not enough, because a lot of people, including con men, torturers, et cetera, can experience other feelings, but they don't value other people. And I think we need to be able to, teach kids to take other perspectives, to help them experience other feelings, but also the ethical aspect of empathy, which is learning to value other human beings. It's your humanity. It's your moral identity, and that we need to cultivate that as well. And I think these conversations about whether there's more empathy or less empathy are partly confusing for a couple of reasons. One is it's very hard to measure, although in general the data does suggest this decline. Another is there's these different aspects of empathy. But I think the bigger issue around empathy is who you have empathy for.
Yeah.
And so it's not clear to me that kids have less empathy for other family members or for close friends. The issue in many respects is, do you have empathy for people who are different from you in gender or sexual orientation or race and class, et cetera? And in some respects, kids do have more empathy now for people who are LGBTQIA kids or kids of different races than they did 50 years ago or 100 years ago. In other respects, I think Catherine's absolutely right. You see this increase in problems like anxiety and depression and other forms of dysregulation that can block empathy, that can undermine empathy. So I think it's a complicated picture in some ways.
So how then do we encourage or develop that? I like how you put it, an empathy married or enmeshed with an ethical viewpoint as well, empathy and ethics together in young people.
Yeah. So I think part of this is skill development. It is learning how to listen. It's learning how to ask questions. It's learning how to read facial expressions. It's learning how to check for understanding in your conversations and to paraphrase what other people are saying. It's learning these conversational skills that build perspective taking and that build an affective connection of some kind. But in terms of valuing other people, it's uncovering similarities with people that you think are different from you. It's understanding the challenges that they've faced. It's when parents model that they value other people, including people who are different from them. So, there are a lot of different pathways to, I think, valuing other people. It is the things we're talking about. When you really prioritize in a family caring for other people, and in schools when you really prioritize caring for other people, kids begin to develop a moral identity, a deep commitment to caring for other people. And that affects all the relationships.
Well, Catherine, we've just got a minute and a half before we have to take another quick break here. But hearing Rick talk about fostering an affective connection to other human beings, this makes my mind circle back to the digital world that these kids are all growing up in. Is it harder to do that with digital natives?
Oh, yes. And I was standing up and applauding during Rick's comments. So I'm 100% on board. And yes, this is one of the biggest areas of challenge when it comes to limit setting. Whenever I talk to parents, and I'm on vacation with my extended family right now, I'm struggling with it myself. But what we have done in my family, and I think a lot of families find this works, is to just have conversations around limits, that it cannot be, yes, this is your phone or your iPad and you use it whenever you want, but that you balance it with the family time, with sharing experiences with your other people around you. And I think there's really compelling research that when kids get a real break, 5 days, even just 5 days without a screen, they show better reading of other people's facial expressions. They are more attuned to other people's emotions, that affective aspect coming out. So our kids do need a break, but we also have to recognize this is the world that we're living in. They also do need how to use them and regulate screens.
Well, we are talking this hour about kids and manners, but really underneath what's all that is empathy, social connection, and whether or not we as the adults are doing all we can to encourage and develop that in young people today. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
I want the works. I want the whole works. Presents and prizes and sweets and surprises of all shapes and sizes. And now, don't care how. I want it now. Don't care how. I want it now.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about kids and manners and empathy, especially around the holiday season where we're all going to be spending a lot of time with each other. I'm joined today by Catherine Reynolds-Lewis. She is author of The Good News About Bad Behavior, Why Kids Are Less Disciplined Than Ever and What to Do About It. Rick Weisbord also joins us. He's the co-director of Human Development and the Psychology Program at Harvard's Graduate School of Education and also the director of Making Caring Common, the Making Caring Common Program, also at Harvard. And I'm going to go to a bunch of calls here in just a second. But Rick, before the break, we were talking about digital technology, and I had asked Catherine if it's harder now to develop that affective connection that you were talking about in a world awash in digital technology. I just wanted to know what your answer is to that.
You know, it's not my field. Okay. The digital world is really not my field. But I guess I would say a couple of things about it. I do worry about digital connections as opposed to in-person connections for all the reasons I said. I mean, this capacity to listen and read facial cues and really have a deep understanding of how someone else is feeling, I think, is just much harder to do. But there's a lot of good things. We're coming out with a report about this actually in the next 6 months. A lot of good things that are happening online, too, where kids are making friends with kids unlike them. They're making friends with kids. LGBTQIA kids are making friends with kids like them. They're starting causes. They're forming connections with people all over the world. So in terms of expanding your circle of concern and developing connections you might not have developed before, some very positive things going on.
All right. Well, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Terrell, who's calling from Green Bay, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Yes. Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
I think there's a big difference in generations, just in general speaking, as far as even when I was a kid. I'm 30 years old now, but kids today are being raised by parents who hated their own parents and their style of parenting. But what they fail to realize is that when their parents were disciplining them for whatever, that's what made them into fully functioning adults in society.
So, meaning what?
Well, I see it time and time again that there's a parent at a restaurant with their kids or in a store with their kids, and their kids are either throwing a fit or demanding everything around them, and their parents just give it to them because they think, well, I don't want to do what my parents did to me and not allow them to have these things.
Ah, I see what you're saying.
Or do these things. So the children just automatically assume that is acceptable behavior no matter where, no matter when, and no matter who they talk to.
Uh-huh. Well, Terrell, thank you so much for your call. Rick, you wanted to respond to that?
Yeah, no, I don't think that it's accurate or it's quite right to say that parents used to hate their parents. But I understand the caller's point, and I do think we're in the middle of this giant social experiment where parents want to be closer to their kids. They really want to, you know, and sometimes parents will say, like, my kid is my best friend. And parents have fewer friends than they used to have, too, which means they're relying more on their kids for closeness. And I think that does mean, I mean, among other reasons, I think it does mean that it's harder for them to tolerate their kids' anger sometimes. And things like discipline can be harder and holding your kid to high expectations because your kid's anger is hard to endure. So I think the caller is right to lift up that point. I think it's an important one.
Catherine, what do you think about that?
Yes, I think the caller hit on the real challenge of our era, which is that the old methods of discipline just don't work anymore, either because kids today aren't cooperating with them or because parents aren't willing to, you know, bring down the hammer. And in the old days, it was compliance. You did what you were supposed to because an adult told you. And now we really need to find models of parenting kids, of teaching them self-discipline that are relying on respect and the mutuality that parents today value. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, interviewed hundreds of parents. I spent hundreds of hours in schools really trying to understand what are these new emerging methods. And I wrote about four of them, but there are many, many more that really focus on connection with the child, that deep relationship between parent and child as the foundation for discipline, communication, as Rick was saying, in deep ways where you're listening, where you're really trying to understand the other person, and then focus on capability building, where your goal as a parent is not to get your child to be perfect, because no children are perfect, and we're seeing that this week, right? but in fact, to have an opportunity to always be working on your kids' skills. And, you know, the holiday week is like the perfect storm for bad manners. So I would say to parents out there who are maybe struggling with this, you will have another opportunity, right? Go home from the holiday and you've learned something about your kids' skills, and then you can just systematically say, okay, maybe we'll refocus on gratitude, on manners, on perspective taking. And we really need to model it for our kids, to practice it in our families, to give our kids that respect if we want the respect back. And this is just our new frontier. If it's harder to parent, it seems harder, it's because it is that yeah. The old, control and command model just doesn't work anymore.
So, Catherine, this is you brought up such an important point. I just want to explore it for another minute here because it's really touched a nerve in me. Because, we don't necessarily, no one here is advocating going back to the sort of the unquestioning respect for authority, command and control, all compliance all the time model that you're talking about from yesteryear. But, you know, on the other hand, okay, I promised I wasn't going to bring my own little band of young people into this, but I'll just give you a personal example. Like, one of mine, she's got spirit. She's got spunk, right? So sometimes we clashed a little. We locked horns, and while this is happening, I see a young person who is showing a profound sense of like individuality and self assertiveness, which I like. You know, I want to encourage that self advocacy. But on the other hand, I'm also her parent, and sometimes I just got to say what she's doing or the consequences of that behavior are wrong and rude. So, like, how do we strike that balance while encouraging the self-advocacy, but also saying, well, at the same time, let's think about what the consequences are?
Yes, absolutely. And I would say, for me, the most important step is reframing that moment with your child. Instead of maybe you're saying, oh my gosh, I failed to teach her manners, we're going to have this terrible interaction, and seeing the behavior as a sign of a problem, see it as a communication. Oh, okay. Yes, we love the spirit, but we also need to work on appropriate times to display it, right? And so in my book, I talk about the 4 R's rule of consequences, where you really need for your child to learn from a consequence. It needs to be revealed in advance. It needs to be respectful. It needs to be related to their action. And it needs to be, respectful so that you have actual learning instead of just her buckling under your frustration. So it's not an easy new world that we're in, but I think there's a lot of ways to just be mindful of what is the lesson I'm trying to teach here and think beyond that interaction to sort of 20 years from now, what is the skill that my child needs right now? And I think that perspective helps us all to be better parents when we're not sort of caught up in that moment.
You're asking for an amount of parental self-regulation, which sometimes in the heat of the moment, it's a little hard to reach for.
It's the best personal growth opportunity ever, parenting.
Rick, what do you think?
No, I mean, I think this is really murky territory because it's so, you know, it's terrific that your daughter's so spirited. It's a wonderful thing, and you want to cultivate that, and you're probably very close to your daughter. And I guess I want to say that, you know, when I said that parents want to be closer to kids, that's a wonderful thing that parents want to be closer to their kids. But I think it does create these dilemmas, right, that we want to be closer to our kids. We want them to be spirited. And sometimes they're going to cross the line. They're going to be snarky. They're going to be rude. And in those moments, it's really important to be the parent and not the best friend. And it can be very tricky to know how to navigate those situations. One suggestion I have is, you know, sometimes you got to talk to people who you really respect and love, your partner, your close friends, about these situations. So you can sort of disentangle what is, you know, in these situations, is this about me? Is this about my kid? You know, why am I reacting the way I'm reacting?
Well, let's go back to the callers. Let's go to Nicole, who's calling from Richmond, Virginia. Nicole, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My point that I'm calling in for is to say that I am considered a millennial, and I'm already used to constantly hearing from older generations that we're doing things wrong, we're going rogue, and I have a 2-year-old son, and we're trying to do things different, my husband and I. If our baby cried, we wanted to hug them. We didn't want to do crying it out. We're trying to move away from toxic masculinity. We are, in my opinion, trying to do things different than where we were raised. We want to be able to express our feelings. And I guess just hearing that kids aren't as disciplined as they used to be, well, I feel like that's kind of relative to what you think of the proper amount of reprimanding or timeouts are. I don't know. And I think that the family structures are different. My husband and I distance ourselves from some of our family members because we differ so much politically, and that's not the kind of environment we want to have around our son. So we are very isolated, I think, in modern day family, trying to do things differently so that my son is a happier, more secure person.
Yeah. Well, Nicole, thank you so much for your call. Okay, so Rick, Nicole actually said a lot there, and I'm afraid we don't have time to dig into all of it. But I'm curious what you think about that she's in the political environment, the national political environment that we adults are all marinated in now. I mean, she says she's, for the good of her child, she's made the decision to distance herself from other members of her family. I'm wondering how sort of the behavior that we're seeing at the highest levels, how this political moment factors into what we're talking about with kids and empathy.
Well, I'm in a little bit of moral shock about the whole thing. I mean, just the lack of decency and civility and listening and this thing that's going on in Congress at the moment where you feel like Republicans and Democrats are in alternate realities and they're not in any way that I can see exercising perspective taking. I have a particular Democratic point of view about this, so I have a particular view about it. But I think it's modeling like really bad things for our kids, and I do worry about that.
Can I just jump in here, though? Yeah. I mean, I sympathize a lot with Nicole or any parent that makes decisions that they feel is in the best interest of their child to protect them. But you know, we've spent this hour talking about trying to encourage empathy in children for those who are not like us. Yeah. And she's made a decision that, again, I'm not judging, but it seems like it might run counter to that.
Well, I think, you know, one thing that is really important is we talk a lot, you know, in many communities we are talking, you know, fortunately about having empathy for people who are different from you in race, class, culture. You also have to have empathy in often for people who are different from you in religious orientation and in political orientation, by which I mean you need to be able to take their perspectives. And very important distinction to make here, that you can take the perspective of someone else and recognize their humanity and dignity doesn't mean you agree with them. You may fiercely disagree with them, and you may think they're taking a position that's immoral. But that doesn't mean that you have to that you can ignore them, or that it's not a good thing to be able to listen to them respectfully and to engage them constructively. Oh. And it's a hard thing to do. It's really hard.
This is thorny territory for sure. But Catherine, what do you think?
Well, I really love what Nicole said about wanting to be close to her son and to build a new world. And I think it's not mutually exclusive to be connected to and loving and close to your child and also set limits. And that's what this whole generation of parents is exploring. That's what my book is all about, which is connected parenting, where you are kind and firm, where you set loving limits that keep your children safe, that teach them skills without breaking that relationship. And it's very possible. There's lots of successful models for doing it. And I would say also to Nicole, look around you for your new family. And I don't know the situation, but you know, it could be really toxic behavior on their extended family's parts that caused this break. And it may be that you just need to find your new family who are going to support you being the kind and firm parents where you're teaching as well as being close to your child. And there's lots of other millennial parents who are really valuing respect and also limits.
Well, Rick, we've got about a minute left to go here, and I want to end on a useful and positive note as well. So, again, it sounds like all of this comes down to empathy once more. So what are some things that, you know, adults can kind of small little changes they can make that could have a profound impact on this?
Well, you know, I think one of the things to think about is just our reflexes day to day. Like, rather than saying the most important thing is that you're happy, what if we said the most important thing is that you're kind, or that, you know, William James in his deathbed said there's three things that are most important in life. The first is to be kind, the second is to be kind, and the third is to be kind. So, you know, sending that message day to day, I think, is super important. I think the other thing that I will emphasize is this issue of expanding kids' sphere of obligation or their sphere of action and being conscious of that day to day so that kids have lots of people in their radar, including those who are different from them, and they understand the contributions those people are making to their lives.
Well, Rick Weisbord is the co-director of the Human Development and Psychology Program at Harvard's Graduate School of Education and director of the Making Caring Common Program. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Extend my gratitude and empathy to you. And Catherine Reynolds Lewis, author of The Good News About Bad Behavior, Why Kids Are Less Disciplined Than Ever and What to Do About It. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us, too.
My pleasure. What a great conversation.
And happy holidays to both of you. On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Justine Daum, Eileen Amata, Stefano Cutsonis, Wes Martin, James Ross, Dori Scheimer, Alex Schroeder, Grace Tatter, and Adam Waller. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman, and I really want to wrap my arms around each one of those folks in thanks because this program would not exist without them. And our profound gratitude to you as well, our listeners, because the show would not have reason to exist without you. So we wish you all joy, love, and peace at the close of this year and as we hurtle along together into the start of a new decade. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Big.